Welcome to the Home Business Podcast with Richard Captain Henderson, publisher of Home Business Magazine, and Sherilyn Colleen, managing editor. This how-to show helps you successfully operate your home-based business.
Greetings and welcome to the Home Business Podcast. I'm Richard Captain Henderson, your skipper at Home Business TV.
And I'm Sherilyn, your co-host.
Let's secure for sea and get underway. We love motivating startup stories on the Home Business Podcast.
Today's guests, Lee Frey and Aaron Frey, researched the laundry care market and found a market gap.
After a kickstarting campaign, they developed a new product and began fulfilling orders from their basement.
Their company, Frey, has evolved to become much more than a detergent and is now a full clothing care line.
Leif and Aaron Frey have an exciting startup story to share with valuable advice for our listeners.
So greetings, Leif and Aaron. Welcome to the Home Business Podcast. Say hello.
Hi, it's great to speak to you. Hello, everyone. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for coming on our show.
Great. Where are you connecting in from today?
So we're connecting from Harwood, Maryland.
Great. Cool. How's Maryland this time of year?
We're actually just coming out from San Francisco, so it feels a little bit less like paradise, but a little bit less like Groundhog Day as well.
I like that analogy with Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Plus, the fall is definitely beautiful around this area this time of year, so it's a great time to be coming back.
Wonderful. So you found an outdated stereotype in the laundry care industry that opened a startup opportunity. Leif and Aaron, talk with us about capitalizing on this stereotype.
Sure. Yeah. So it kind of originated from this idea of personalization and almost customization as well, where we were men buying men's shampoos and fragrances and clothing products and using the same laundry detergent that our mother had been using. And not that there was anything at all wrong with that, but it wasn't a product or a brand proposition that resonated with us in any way, shape, or form. And so after kind of exploring this a little bit more, we realized that it wasn't just us feeling this way, and it truthfully wasn't just men feeling this way either. But this stereotype kind of originates from this idea, and this is an idea that's pushed by the industry, that generally women should be the ones doing laundry in the household. We felt that was wrong, but that's kind of, again, what most of the current products are pushing. So although we're now a gender inclusive brand and we have products for both men and women, we started as a line for men based off of this idea that, hey, by creating laundry products tailored towards men, we could break down this outdated gender stereotype.
Yeah, that's kind of fascinating because this is a great story because you went into an established long-term old market and carved out a new niche. So it sounds like we're dealing with an issue of branding here. It was not necessarily the actual technological product. It was more a brand and how it was being marketed and perceived with some old stereotypes. And that's what opened up the opportunity.
So there's actually yes and no as well. There's definitely a lot of technical aspects to our brand as well. We filed a patent on our formula. There's an entire fragrance aspect to it. But one element is this branding and who we're pitching to and how we're pitching that.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this startup. Leif and Aaron, you know, you used a kickstarting campaign, you know, to help you get started with Frey and getting the financing going. You know, how did that go? And can you give any advice, good or bad, in how Kickstarter worked for you and to make it work for our listeners?
So for us, the Kickstarter campaign was not necessarily really successful in its own right. We really only raised enough money for us to purchase our first set of products. And so it was just enough to get started, sort of the way that Kickstarters were originally meant to be used for. Nowadays, there are people who will spend months creating a really high-end video and they will spend tens of thousands of dollars just to get their branding right before they even do the Kickstarter. So that's a different strategy, and those ones tend to raise a lot more. But for us, it was enough to get our first purchase order. And then probably one of the best things is that Good Morning America saw our Kickstarter, and they picked it up, and they asked us to go on their Shark Tank Your Life segment. And so we got to meet Kevin O'Leary, and we got to be on like prime time television.
But the Kickstarter was really, for us, this was not a career decision. This was launched out of college. And so it was very much, we had no capital. We threw up a campaign in a matter of a few weeks,
just on this basic idea that, hey, we have a product we think others might be interested in. Nowadays, Kickstarter truly is an enterprise to itself, and it's amazing.
But I mean, you used it smartly. You came in with the merit of your idea and didn't spend a lot on flash or anything like that, and it helped get you started. But it looked like it led into the most valuable thing, which is to get a good key referral like that with that Shark Tank. And, that helped you grow from there. Well, fascinating insights. You know, before moving on to our next topic, I'd like to highlight this show's sponsor, City America. City America will help you manage your own City Directory website, keep 100% of income. City America provides ongoing support and training, only one site per city. So contact City America today to see if your city is available. For more information, call 800-856-9870 or visit cityamerica.com or our podcast website for more information on sponsors.
So you began by fulfilling orders from your basement, but I imagine your order processing has grown outside the home. Leif and Aaron, what part of your business is still home-based?
So currently we have the ability to work from essentially wherever we want, as long as we have our computers and internet access and our phones. And that is fantastic because it gives us the flexibility to do things like go out to California for the Y Combinator Startup Accelerator, as well as it gives us the ability to easily change locations. Like we are going to be moving to New York because that's where a lot of our investors and a lot of connections that are relevant to our industry are located.
So truthfully, the vast majority of our business is now done out of our home, wherever that home may be at the time.
I like that. You are mobile entrepreneurs.
That's the dream.
That's great. So you have a home office where you might get back to, but you keep yourself wired with technology, keep connected. And so it's kind of wherever you're at with laptop or smartphone, and you're just as competitive, and you're able to actually run your company in a kind of a virtual manner then.
Yeah. And the more interesting thing perhaps is that we have a team of over 12 at this point, and the vast majority of them are virtual as well. And it's really kind of part of this new economy where you don't necessarily need a central office, and you can almost recruit better talent by not forcing people to relocate to your city because they can also work.
Now, do you use a lot of freelancers and contractors, vendors, primarily?
And that allows us to hire specialists in an industry as well, where we might hire a freelancer or a contractor who specializes only in email marketing for CPG businesses. And that means that they've been doing this for 5+ years. They've done this with countless CPG businesses similar to ours, and they're just experts at what they do, versus hiring somebody like maybe an actual CMO who's a jack of all trades and yet master of none. And we found that's a very good way for us to grow.
It also saves a lot of time on the commute. So a lot of people will easily spend an hour getting ready and getting to work. And if that's tacked on to each end of their day, then they might be working they might be getting paid for 8 hours of work when in reality they are committing 10 hours of their time. Whereas we can just wake up, get right out of bed, and instantly start working.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, but at least we don't have to battle traffic.
There is a darker side to that as well. We joke about
that.
When you can work whenever and wherever, there's also this, well, shouldn't you always be working? And there are definitely points in the path of our business where it got to unhealthy levels of work because literally instead of hanging out with your friends or your family, you could and probably should be working.
It could secretly just creep up with you and become an addiction. But you brought out a good point on that, and that it actually allows you to tap into even better talent by, working with people on a freelance basis, because you're not limited by location. It's just somebody else being able to plug in.
Exactly.
And our the contractors that we work with have decades of experience, and so it would be really hard to find people with that kind of experience that would be willing to work for a startup.
And I bet that the better support personnel are more comfortable working as freelancers vice of being a W-2 employee for a company.
Exactly.
Well, you know, we hear today a lot about what are called startup accelerators. Leif and Aaron, you know, please discuss your experience with the Y Combinator and, you know, how it helped you succeed in business.
So it really was a fantastic experience. We were unsure about it before we actually attended there. Like, we were accepted and we were actually debating at one point in time whether we wanted to do it or not. And I think that it was one of the best business decisions that we have made. Not only was it really inspiring to be around a whole lot of other people who think outside the box and have these great ideas and are working towards their vision, but we also got to hear from speakers who have started, you know, companies that are worth billions of dollars. And it was just, and yet they would be there up on stage speaking to us. They'd be joking. They'd be charismatic. They would be talking about the sort of darker side of their startups when they had nothing and stuff like that. And it just made it feel really tangible, where these were real people who had done amazing things, but at the same time, there was no reason why like a normal person couldn't like do a lot of these.
Like, so it's for the startup accelerators. Did it provide some access to funding? Was it primarily good for just building up your contacts, or, you know, hearing these motivating stories? Like, what really stood out was the big advantage of that accelerator?
You kind of touched, we categorize them into three main ones. One, the mentorship is unbelievable. And not only are you paired with active mentors through the experience, but you are able to get in contact with anybody else who has gone through Y Combinator. And obviously, these are brands as big as, you know, Airbnb to Stripe, but to other people within our industry. So Scentbird, for instance, is a brand that we had idolized for a while, and we now actively speak to them. The second bit, as Aaron mentioned, was actually just being surrounded by other startups. And that's a massively valuable piece that I think too many people overlook. And then the third one was there was absolutely this element of fundraising. We were able to raise more money in less time at a higher valuation than we would have expected. And they just set us up for success with that.
Yeah, and that was in part due to the fact that Y Combinator culminates in something that they call Demo Day. And that was an event where we pitched to a large group of investors. I believe that there were about 600 different investor groups that were.
Now tell me you were nervous.
I'd
have been terrified.
We practiced a few times.
yeah. And then there were another 2,000 watching online. So that helped. And so it just created this sort of a competitive aspect between people who wanted to invest in us, because we don't necessarily want to give up more equity than we have to at this point in time. So we had a sort of set limit for how much money we actually wanted to raise. And so that, because there's a supply and demand aspect of it, that
created a bidding war.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Also, you were lucky. You had some people actually maybe bidding on you.
we closed around in under 10 days, which is, incredibly quickly. We were very fortunate.
Good.
Let's talk marketing. Leif and Aaron, what has proven particularly effective for you, and how does social media play into this?
Yeah, so social media has been our primary form of growth. It is an amazing way to communicate with your consumers, where you can have active conversations, both through literally speaking with them, whether it's comments or reply threads or email, but also just through the pictures you're putting forward, what you're putting through your website. So social media is not only a way to target new consumers, and obviously the targeting is pretty powerful, where we know what our consumer looks like, our several sets of consumers, and so we can target them within social media. But then you get to continue this conversation. And one of the things that we pride ourselves on is that we internalize consumer feedback and utilize it quite quickly. And so that's allowed us to build a better and better product and better brand, because we listen to our consumers and then take that data and, again, improve upon it.
I imagine a thing with working with getting that feedback through social media is you're pretty responsive. You reply back pretty quickly then on the feedback you get. Because I hear time is everything in social media.
It really is. Timing's everything in most aspects of life. But if somebody posts a comment and you don't respond for 4 days, you've already lost them. But if somebody posts,
yeah, I learned that lesson. You don't do that. But what, you know, I just love social media, because I think it's also changing all the time. What part of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, some of the other ones, what proved particularly effective for you?
Yeah, and so what's interesting is that there are Facebook is a totally different set of users than Instagram, which is a totally different set of users than Snapchat. And that kind of surprised us a little bit, especially because Instagram and Snapchat seem to be in competition, where Instagram brought out Stories and Snapchat has Snapchat Stories. So they seem very similar, but totally different demographics. So at first we were putting most of our eggs in the Facebook basket because it had amazing targeting. And you know, you can create literally audiences with like, hey, our consumers are 25 to 34 year old people who live in cities.
Yeah, they definitely have the demographics.
It's amazing. Yeah. But what we quickly realized is that, hey, we can't just be using Facebook because we're missing two entirely separate massive groups of people who are using the other platforms. And so what surprised us was how little overlap there are between those, especially with Instagram and Snapchat.
Really? So you mean you found a lot of your Instagram and Snapchat audiences weren't engaged at all in Facebook?
Yeah, and even more so, the Instagram and Snapchat audiences didn't overlap. And there's a lot of data behind this now, but it was just like, hey, the Snapchat user is not actually using Instagram and vice versa.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the tough dilemma even I'm facing in publishing is where are these consumers going? Because they're not necessarily being print magazines. They're you know, coming into other types of media and apps, and you're seeing the same thing also. You're bringing out that critical factor where it's not only looking at all the different forms of social media and online marketing, but finding out where your market segments are because they might not overlap very much.
Exactly. The beautiful thing, obviously, with social media is that unlike print, you can track your ROI to the literal penny. And so for bootstrapped brands like ours, that was absolutely critical because we had to know that if we were going to put in $100, we were going to get $200 back. Mm-hmm. And that's really difficult to track outside of a digital platform.
I love that. That's the perfect word for a startup, bootstrap. that's been around for a couple of decades, and that really sums up the mentality we have to have on this. Well, you know, Leif and Aaron, you know, you quickly expanded into related marketings with a full clothing care line. You know, how talk with us a little bit about that. How easy was this expansion?
Yeah, so from the beginning, what we saw in the market was not just this like, hey, we want to make a different type of laundry detergent. It was this idea of like, hey, we want to change how people are looking at this chore. Where shaving, for instance, Harry's and Dollar Shave Club kind of turned it from a chore into a little bit of an art, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody's investing in their clothing. If it's not investing monetarily, it's just putting time and energy into picking it out and shopping for it. And so we kind of use this idea of a shoe care kit where if you buy a nicer pair of shoes or you invest in your shoes, there's often a shoe care kit that goes with it so you can take better care of it. People outspend on their clothing 4 or 5 to 1 as they do to their shoes, and yet they're washing it in generic detergents that don't resonate with them. So from the beginning, it wasn't a laundry detergent. It was a clothing care idea. And that's where we wanted to very quickly expand from just selling laundry detergent.
But the key thing is it built on the foundation of your detergent, your cleaning. Exactly. And that's what allowed you to leverage that and then succeed.
Yeah, exactly. And another analogy that we like to make is that in the California Gold Rush, the people that tended to be more successful were not necessarily the miners. It was the people.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's where Levi's came from. They were selling jeans to miners. So in this day and age, there's 1,000 new clothing brands that are cropping up almost every single day. That industry is booming. The menswear and womenswear industries are worth over $1 trillion. Luxury menswear is growing at 14% per year, which is actually is incredible. And so we are sort of targeting that gold rush where we are, rather than creating a clothing company, we are creating products to better care for that clothing.
So I that's a good point to bring out. You know, people are already making a big investment that's growing. The percentages are growing all the time for the clothing. And, you know, but the money that they're investing in the cleaning, that's what opened up an opportunity because it's so relatively small compared to the overall investment.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. It's this both this cleaning as well as this fragrance as well as just this branding aspect where laundry is truthfully one of the more personal aspects of a person's life, right? Everything you wear, but the sheets you sleep in, the towels you dry off with, all go through your laundry. And so we wanted to create products that resonate with the consumer on some level.
And the laundry detergent industry is also pretty massive. It's a $150 billion industry. The industries that we are targeting are about 10 times the size of the razor industry.
I'll tell you what's going to happen. You're going to start get a multi-billion-dollar offer from some big detergent conglomerate like Procter & Gamble. I can see it coming.
We appreciate the kind words. We'll see what happens.
Leif and Aaron, this has been a great discussion on kickstarting and launching a product line in the clothing care industry. Do you have any final points you would like to share?
No, you guys have been wonderful. Again, I think at the end of the day, Y Combinator says it best. You want to make something that people want. That's what our objective has been since the outset. And one of the things that we're doing is making sure that we're listening to the consumers and continuing to create products that they want. So that's been kind of our driving factor in everything that we do, and it will continue to be so.
Well, Leif and Aaron Frey, thank you for being such great guests on the Home Business Podcast.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. To learn more about Leif and Aaron Frey and their clothing care line, Frey, visit livefrey.com or our podcast website for more information on guests.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Home Business Podcast. Share your feedback with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and at our website, homebusinessmag.com.
Visit the website for information on advertising. Subscribe free to our newsletter. Please visit our sponsors. For more information, visit homebusinessmag.com and our Home Business Expo at homebusinessexpo.com.
I'm Richard Captain Henderson saying anchors away.
We'll talk with you soon. Until then,
make it a great home-based biz day.